Okay.
Okay, continuing in Shoftim, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Tes, chapter 7, verse 9. Vayhi balayla hahu. Just to remind you where we're holding here, Gidon has gathered an army to combat the Midianite force, and he started with 32,000 men, and Hashem said, that's too many people, they're going to think that it was their own hand, and you have to whittle it down. And in the end, after the downsizing process, Gidon is left with a force of 300 men. Vayhi balayla ahu, and it was on that night, Vayomer elav Hashem, and Hashem said to him, Kum raid b'machaneh. Get up and go down to the camp of the Midianites. Ki nesati b'yodecha, for I have handed him, Midian, into your hand. V'im yareya tol aredeh. And if you are afraid to descend, raid ata, you should go down, ufura na'archa el hamachaneh, as well as fura, your lad, should also join you in going down to the camp. And pasuk yud, parak zayin pasuk yud. Vishamata mayidaberu. And you should listen to what they're saying. And then your hand will be strengthened. And then you'll go down and fight, attack the camp. And he and Pura, his lad, went down to the armed guards at the edge of the camp. Umidyang va'amalek, this is verse Yudbez, Umidyang va'amalek v'chol b'nei kedem noflim ba'emek. And Midyan, Amalek, and all the B'nai Kedem were all camped in the valley, sleeping. Ka'ar Belarov, like a great horde of locusts. Zilig Maleyaming Misbar, and there was no count to their camels. Kachol Shalsmas Hayom Larov, like the sand on the edge of the sea. Were they so great in numbers? So we have the second here. We have a small band of 300 men waiting to attack a horde of thousands and thousands of Midianites and Amalekites and Kedemites all joined together to destroy B'nai Yisrael. And Hashem says to Gidon, if you're afraid, you and Pura should sneak down into the camp and you should listen to what they're saying and then you will be strengthened. This is the first time we've heard of him. He seems to be Gidon's, assistant, so maybe he's his arms bearer, I'm not sure. Pasuk Yogimel Vayavo Gidon, and Gidon came, Dine Ish Misapir Lere Ehu Chalom. And there was a man, and he was telling his friend the dream that he had. He overheard the guards talking. One of the guards was recounting a dream that he had had. Vayomer, and he said, Hinei chalom chalamti, I had a dream. Vinei silil lechem seorim misapech b'machaneh. And there was a silil, a roll or something of lechem seorim, of barley bread, misapech b'machaneh midyong. It was flipping through, the rotating through the machaneh of Midian. What's that?
Salil means roasted, right?
Salil does mean roasted often.
So he basically is dreaming about...
Yeah, so, okay, you're right. That's the description of how it was. It means like a bun here, but it, that's right. It was formed by roasting. Or others learn, actually, salil here comes from a word to mean like noise. They heard the noise of this bread rolling through the camp. What? it was rolling towards the camp, rolling through. Mishapesh means to flip over and over. Yeah, like a big boulder coming down a mountain, boom, 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 flipping over.
Okay.
That's what this fellow dreamed of.
Very wide or very hard bread.
Vayavo ad ha'oel, and it came to the tent, I don't know which tent, vayakehu, and it hit it, vayipol, and it fell, vayahafcheu l'mala, and it flipped it over, v'nafal ha'ohel, and the tent collapsed. That's what this guard dreamed, a large barley bread roll that, what? Exactly. Came rolling into the camp, and it flipped over the tent and collapsed it. Pasuk Yudalid, Vayang Re'ehu Vayomer, and his friend responded, and he said, the one who heard the dream, Ein Zo Stilti Imcherev Gidon Ben Yoash Ish Yisrael. This can only mean one thing. This can only refer to the sword of Gidon, the son of Yoash, the man of Israel. Nasan ha'elokim b'yado. God has handed us into his hand. As Midyan v'eskol ha'machaneh. Midyan and the whole camp. We are handed over into his hand. He's going to defeat us. That dreams what? Okay. Vayihi Chishmoa Gidon es Mitzvah HaChalom, and it was when Gidon heard the telling of over of the dream, the Es Shivro, and its interpretation, Vayishtachu, and he bowed in thanks to Hashem. Shivro, an interesting word, means interpretation. Sever usually means to break something. Mishbar, Shvira, so it's the Farshim explain, it means it's the breaking down, it's closed up, and then you break it apart to explain it. That's why that's the relationship between the word Shever and a interpretation of a dream. That's Shivro. Vayashav El Machane Yisrael, and he returned to the camp of Israel. Vayomer, and he said, Kumu, get up, arise, Ki Nasang Hashem B'yedchem Es Machane Midyan, for Hashem has handed into your hands the camp of Midian.
I mean, that was pretty clear as to what this is all about, I would think.
Yeah.
Well, Hashem pretty much told these two guards it's coming.
Yeah. So I want to share with you a Chassam Sofer about this, about these psukim, and really about much of utilizing a few other things in the parak. So, what's the idea of, first of all, of the barley bread? What's the idea of this mishapech of turning over? So very simply understood, the turning over is like the turnaround. In fact, I saw someone point out, the Mishpat Zav points out that the Gemara and Megillah, right, we're in Adar now, so we can talk about Purim. The Gemara and Megillah recounts a story, part of the Purim story, that Haman, when he was being sent by Ahasuerus to take Mordechai on the horse through the street, he found Mordechai in the Beis Medrash teaching, and Mordechai was scared when he saw Haman there. He sent all the students into hiding, but Haman asked him, "B'maya skisa, what are you learning?" And Mordechai replies, "Bizman to beis hamikdash kayam." Man demanded mincha ma'isim ali kumti besulto miskaperle. If you would donate, dedicate a mincha offering, you could bring a komet, a handful of flour as an atonement. And Haman replies, says the Gemara in Megillah, Asa malikumsi kimcha ditru, your little bit of your komet, your little scoop of flour will come. Vidachi asara alfi kikri kas padidi, and it will override my 10,000 silver coins, which I promised to the people who would destroy the Jewish people. Your little bit of flour has the power to override all my money that I promised to those who would attack Israel.
Okay.
And Rashi there tells us that Mordechai was learning in Yonah de Yoma, because it was the second day of Pesach. And the second day of Pesach is the day that we bring the Karban Omer. And so they were learning about the Karban Omer, which is a Karban Mincha, and that we see somewhat in that zechus, that was the beginning of a v'nahapoku, of a turnaround. And just like there we have the merit of the Mincha bringing a hafacha, a turnaround, v'nahapoku, in the story of Purim. So here we have the merit of the Mincha, which is what's being referred to by this barley offering, the Karban Omer, bringing mishapis, bringing v'nahapochu. So, right, Rashi already on our pasuk points that out. In pasuk Yud Gimel, Rashi says, Lechem Seorim is Zechus HaOmer Akarei B'Pesach. It's the merit of the Karban Omer, which is brought on Pesach. That's what this large piece of barley rolling through was a reference to, because it was also the second day of Pesach. As we mentioned before, we talked about Pesach, that it was the night of Pesach when the angel, or the day after, the first day of Pesach when the angel came to Gidon. Right, Gidon said, last night we read the Hallel, right, at the Pesach Seder, we learned about that at the beginning of the parak. So here, it's now the second day of Pesach, and it's in the merit of the Karban Omer, says Rashi, that they are going to be safe. Now, the Chacham Sofer uses this idea, but builds on it. The Chacham Sofer says, what's going on here? What's this kippah? What's this turning over? What does that represent? You mentioned it could represent the turnaround. Chacham Sofer says a different approach. As we mentioned, this piece of barley was a reference to the Karban Omer. So we know that the Karban Omer is very important. I mean, it's very important some, but it's also very important because it's the Karban Omer that allows us to begin eating from the new grain crop, right? Still practiced by many today, those who don't practice it rely on certain heterim of suffix. So we have the Isser Daraisa of Yashan, of Chadash, I should say. You're not allowed to eat from the new crop until the second day of Pesach, either when the Karban Omer is brought, or I think if the Karban Omer is not being brought, then at midday it becomes permitted. So many still observe Yashan, others rely on various heterim. But definitely it was being observed in its fullness there. Also, those heterim, by the way, only apply outside of Israel. But not inside. Right, not entirely.
Because of the harvesting time, right?
I think it's because outside of Israel it's only rabbinic, but I'm not so familiar with the sugya. But
I have a question. Once the Omer was gathered and they threshed it, so now they have all these barley grains. What do they do with them? Do they turn them into flour, or do they just is that them whole?
What did the Karban Omer look like?
What happened to the barley grain?
That's the question.
I think it was flour.
It was flour. So if it was flour, they would have to dry it, right? Yeah, you can't make fresh grain into flour.
Okay.
Right? You have to remove all the water first so it's perfectly dry.
Okay.
So the only way to dry it on that quicker time scale.
So you're just making a point that roasting here fits in. Okay.
And then perhaps that's why it says surreal.
Okay, interesting. So we have to, I'm not sure how it all works, but it could be.
I'm just trying to put two and two together here. Perhaps I'm getting five, I don't know.
Yeah.
The other thing is the word Omer, right, which uses an ayin, so it's pronounced Omer. I always think that it has something to do with the word hamor, donkey. In other words, an omer was a donkey load.
An omer is like a bundle.
No. They think that in ancient times, originally, the quantity
by
an omer
okay.
was a donkey load.
Okay.
Right, but whatever a donkey load was, it was an omer.
Okay, interesting.
So if you had an omer, a donkey load, full of roasted grain, yeah, it would...
Saying it's a nice bomb, like a boulder.
It could easily knock down a tent.
Okay, very interesting.
Here's, I don't know if this is going along the same lines, but you talked about, in this particular rendition, they said this is, the barley, you were talking about that, a roasted barley bread. A cake bakes it. This is from Rashi, the Targum, Yonatan. Barley bread symbolizing the merit of the Omer sacrifice on Pesach. Rashi based on Leviticus Ramah.
Perfect.
An expression of Israel was saved by its merit.
Very good. So, so that's Rashi. And the Sam Sofer is using that idea, but he's going to approach it a little bit differently in terms of also this idea of flipping over. So he says that what actually happened on that day was that Iser, that which they weren't allowed to eat chadash, changed from Heter to Iser, and then back to Heter on the same day. It was permitted, actually, at the beginning. They'll explain why. Then it became forbidding, and then it became permitted all on the same day. And that's the idea of the flipping over. Why? So he says, because the Midianites had total control of Israel at this point. And they were taxing them, and they were ruling over them. He says, Tosfos told that if you live under a non-Jewish rule, if they're taxing you in Israel, so you are no longer required to separate out truma or maaser from your food. And there are those who also say that the same is true for chadash, that there's no iser, you are allowed to eat from the new crop when you're under a non-Jewish rule. He says, therefore, assuming that it's actually possible for the non-Jews to acquire Eretz Yisrael, then, and to take away its Kedusha, so he says, and they would not have been eating, they would not have been practicing the Iser of Chadash in that time, because the Midianites were ruling them, they wouldn't have been practicing the Iser Chadash, they would have been eating from the new crop even before Pesach. However, that day, they defeated the Midianites. So on that day, they took control of Eretz Yisrael. Chadash became forbidden. Right? So now they're in control. But then, it was the second day of Pesach. They brought the Karban Omer, and Chadash once again became permitted. That was the... represented by the flipping over of this Omer ball, that it flips from being permitted to being forbidden, and then back to being permitted again.
This is from the Malbim?
So, this is from the Chasam Sofer. So,
Malbim says, I don't know if you want me to read it or not.
Wait, one second, let me finish the...
Yeah.
So, now he points out that if this all would have happened the next day, then it would have been a big problem. Because when is it that either the Karban Omer or even Itzumo Soyom, the day itself, if you don't have the Karban Omer, can now permit you to eat chatzis? Right now we don't have a Karban Omer, so but still the day, the second day of Pesach, I think at midday, chatzis becomes permitted once again. But that's only if at that time it's forbidden. Then, you know, that day hits, or the Karban Omer hits, and then it becomes permitted. But if it's already permitted, because you're under non-Jewish rule, and then, so you didn't need that heter of the Karban Omer during that day, on the second day of Pesach, and now it's the third day of Pesach, and then you defeat the non-Jews, and then you defeat the non-Jewish army, he says that it will remain forbidden. Because it would become forbidden and remain forbidden. Because you never, the heter, that which was permitting you to eat the chadash was because you were under non-Jewish rule. It wasn't anything to do with the Karban Omer. And now today, it's the third day of Pesach now. It's a week after Pesach. Whenever this happens, if you would defeat them and take back control, so then you're now in control and now the Isser of Chadash kicks in, and you don't have the second day of Pesach there to permit it. You don't have the Karban Omer. Too late for that, and you don't have the Karban the second day of Pesach itself to now permit it, and it would remain forbidden. So based on this, he wants to explain something from the beginning of the chapter. If we go back to, we're still in, actually from the previous chapter, Perek Vav, chapter 6. Pasuk Gimel. Way back when this whole discussion of Gidon began. So in Pasuk Gimel. Sorry, Perek Vav.
Oh, wow.
Perek Vav, chapter 6. Pasuk Gimel. So it's a drive for
third.
Yes.
Third one. Okay.
There you go.
And it was when Israel had stolen the Midian camp came up.
So, this is the beginning of the whole discussion with Gidon. Midian is oppressing, and it says, Pasukim of Ahayim Zara Yisrael, and it would be if Israel would plant, the Allah Midian v'Amalek v'Bnei Kedem v'Alu Allah, and Midian and Amalek and B'nei Kedem would come up and attack them and take their crops. Vayachanu aleihem, pasuk dalek, and they would encamp near them. Vayashpisas yivul haaretz, they would destroy the crops of the land. Ad boacha Aza, extending all the way to Aza. Below yashiru michya b'Yisrael, they wouldn't leave any food in Israel. V'sev ashar v'chamor, they wouldn't leave a sheep, a ox, or a donkey. And then it says, skip one verse, Pasuk Vav, Vayidal Yisrael Me'od Mipnei Midyan, and B'nai Yisrael was very poor because of Midyan, Vayizako B'nai Yisrael and Hashem, and B'nai Yisrael cried out to Hashem. So, the Gemara tells us, we actually touched on this when we learned those Sukkim, the Gemara says in Bava Metzia that B'nai Yisrael was only called poor because they lacked grain. It says, Vayidal Yisrael Me'od, it wants to prove that if you're lacking grain, you're considered poor. And the Gemara says, you see that from here, because here they lacked grain. And look, they're described as poor because in Pasuk Vav it says, and they were very poor. So you see that if you're lacking grain, you're considered poor. That's the Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Marsha asks on this, we actually mentioned this also, the Marsha asks, why does the Gemara assume that they were being called poor because they were lacking grain? We also see that they're lacking animals as well. If you look back at Pasuk Dawid, it says they didn't leave food for Israel. V'sev ashar v'chamor. They also didn't leave sheep or oxen or donkeys. They took all their animals also. Why does the Gemara assume that it's because you're lacking grain that you're considered poor? Maybe it's even because maybe you also need to be lacking animals to be considered poor. Okay, you're right. You're right. So then I don't need a pasuk then to tell me that. On the other hand, you cannot serve God Where do you see from these sukkim that you're considered poor if you're lacking grain? So the Chassam Sofer says like this. Earlier, in Pasuk Gimel, we mentioned the Allah Midyan v'Amalek u'b'nei Kedem. Midyan, Amalek, and B'nai Kedem all came up and were attacking Israel. However, if you look at Pasuk Vav, why are we called poor? Vayidal Yisrael me'od, because of whom? Because of Midyan, Mipnei Midyan, the Pasuk says. So first we have that it was Amalek, Midyan, Amalek, and B'nai Kedem all attacking us. But when it describes why we were poor, it blames it solely on Midyan. Why? Why only Midyan? So based on what we've been saying, we can have an answer. He says, when we talk about being poor here, we don't mean that you're just lacking in possessions. Because, he says, that could change. You're not poor if you're lacking. You can, the Gemara is not describing you to you what's considered the threshold of poverty, and below that you're considered poor. That's not what the Gemara is coming to tell you. That either, you know, depending on how you define poverty, you can figure out on your own, or the way he says it is that it can change. So there can always be a Yeshua, there can always be a salvation. Even if a person is lacking, they're not necessarily poor, because at any moment things can change, can turn around. However, they were poor because of one thing here. Because of the grain. Because things cannot turn around for their grain. Because either way, right now they're being controlled by Midyan. And if they're controlled by Midyan, then they don't have their grain. Right? Now, is there a hope that things will turn around? Is there a hope that things will turn around? So for other things, there might be a hope. But for Chadash, there's no hope. Because, like he said, since if Chadash would all of a sudden become permitted today, right? But unless it's, you know, right around Pesach time, the second day of Pesach, that's not going to help them. Because it will be continue to be forbidden. Chadash will continue to be forbidden to them. Right now it's permitted because the Midianites control them. But that doesn't help them because they don't have access to it because the Midianites are taking it all. So they're poor from grain. Now if things would turn around for the better and they would conquer the Midianites, so then Chadash will now become forbidden. They didn't have the Karban Omer on the second day of Pesach, and so it would continue to be forbidden. They still wouldn't be able to eat the grain. So that's why specifically on the grain they were considered poor. They were poor because of the grain, because that is the one thing that there was no chance of turning around for them. Unless it happened to be right around the second day of Pesach. But that the turnaround happened. But the grain was, there was no hope for the grain. Right now they couldn't have it, and if it would turn around it would become forbidden, and they still wouldn't be able to have it. That's why it was specifically the grain that the Gemara considers have made them poor. And not only that, but that also explains why the blame for making them poor is solely on Midyan and not on Amalek and B'nai Kedem. Again, in Pasuk Gimel it says that Midyan, Amalek, and B'nai Kedem were all oppressing them. But then in Pasuk Vav it says they were poor because of Midyan. Why only because of Midyan? Because it was Midyan that was controlling them. Although Amalek and B'nai Kedem were oppressing them, Pasuk Gimel,
Midian allowed it.
What's that?
Midian allowed it.
Not only that, but they may have been oppressing them and they may have been attacking them and raiding them, but they weren't the controlling party over Israel. That was Midian. So they weren't the ones who were creating this situation where Chadash was permitted, but then would possibly become forbidden if they would take it back. They weren't the ones creating the situation where the Karban Omer would not be able to operate. It was solely Midian who was in control of Israel. They were the ones who were creating the situation where Chadash was permitted, but because Chadash was permitted, then you couldn't Yitzumo Shel Yom, the day of the second day of Pesach, where the Karban Omer couldn't permit Chadash because it was already permitted. And therefore, if it would become, if they would conquer Midian later, they wouldn't be able to turn it around because they didn't, it would become forbidding and it would remain forbidding because they didn't bring the Karban Omer. That was solely on the shoulders of Midian, who was the controlling party, and that's why it was so, the Pasuk puts the blame on Midian for making them poor.
There's a description here also in regard to that. Because Rabbi Isaac and Rabbi Levi dispute. One says they were poor in good deeds as well.
Okay.
So that brought about the lack of flour offering.
Okay, interesting. Fine, so going back to... Yeah, so that's right. He actually quotes that medrash. There is a medrash that they were poor because they couldn't bring the Karban Omer, but that really fits into this. He fits that in. They weren't able to bring the Karban Omer because Chadash was currently permitted. So he really ties all the different chazals together. That's the Chacham Sofer. He says a little bit more on another part of the parak, but I think we're gonna leave that off. So let's return to Parak Zion, and we'll pick up from Pasuk Yud. Sorry, Pasuk Tes Zion. If I have anything else to add, that's good. Okay. Pasuk Tes Zion. We're going to go back to Parak Zion, chapter 7. Pasuk Tes Zion. Vayachat eshlosh meos ha'ish shlosh ha'rashim. And Gidon divided the 300 men into three different troops. Vayitein shofaros biad kulam v'chadim rekim. And he gave shofars into the hands of each of them. V'chadim rekim and empty jugs. V'lapidim besocha kadim. And they lit flames inside of these jugs. We mentioned last week that the reason why they had 300 shofaros was because they were originally a very large band, and whoever, you know, the people in the front, there were people assigned to blow the shofar, to call people to battle, and altogether there were maybe 300, maybe more, but usually not everyone has a shofar, but because 31,700 people deserted, or left, were asked to leave. So then they all left their shofros, they left their food there, so they had plenty of shofros for everyone, and they had jugs for everyone. What were the shofros and what were the lapidim, the flames, going to be used for? So, first of all, Rashi points out that it was, the shofros would be a merit to remind us of the zechus, of the merit, to remind Hashem of Matan Torah. But on a more physical, practical level, so it was nighttime, Rashi says. And they needed the flames to light the way, but they put them in the jug so that it wouldn't cause too much light, and it would protect the light a little bit from being seen by the Midianite camp. The Malbim says that they were preparing for battle. The Malbim says that the shofros were, Rashi doesn't mention the shofros, but they were to scare the enemy troops, and the flames as well were to frighten the Midianites with the flames and the smoke, etc. And we'll see they're going to break the jugs, and so that the jugs carrying the flames was like an amateur bomb sort of. It was causing explosion and cause a great fright to the Midianites when they would suddenly see this big burst of flame, that would be used to frighten them. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayomer Aleihem, and he said to them, Gidon says to them, Mimeni Siru V'chein Tasu, you should watch me and do as I do. Vinei Anoch Yiva B'Ktei HaMachaneh, and behold, I will come to the edge of the camp. Yorkasher Esa Kain Tasun, and it should be that what I do, you should do. I'm not sure why he has to repeat himself, that whatever I do, you should do. Maybe he has to just drive the point home. Although I think the first one we can interpret to mean many sphere of a Kain Tasun, that you shouldn't do anything until I do something. And then the second time he's saying, do as I do. The Balaturim in last week's Parsha, Parsha's Truma, notes that the words Zechein Ta'asu appear twice in the Torah. They appear in the Pasuk in last week's Parsha. But they appear here in our Pasuk Yud Zayin, the saying Ta'asu, and they appear as well at the beginning of Parshas Truma. Pasuk says, Kechol asher ani mareh uscha esavnis hamishkan, all that I show you, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, in terms of the formation, how to make the Mishkan, the eighth tavnis kol kelav, and the form of all of its vessels, v'chein tasu, and so you should do. The words v'chein tasu appear twice in Tanakh. One in that pasuk, and one in our pasuk Yadayim. The Bala Turim says that it was the zechus of the kelim, the merit of the kelim of the Mishkan that Gidon was bringing with him, and all that he did was corresponding to the service of the mikdash and the kelim. The Bala Turim says he put the flames into the jugs. The jugs were to be a reminder of the kelim, of the vessels of the Mishkan. And we'll see in the next Pasuk, actually in Pasuk Yates, that the time that they approached the camp was Rosh HaShmora HaTichona, the beginning of the middle watch, which was point in the night. That was the earliest time that any avoda was ever done in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan. And that was the Trumas HaDeshen, which was the clearing of the ashes of the Mizbeach. It was normally done later on a normal day, but during the Shalosh Regalim, when there was major backup and major huge piles of ashes and just so many people bringing karbanos, they had to start the whole service earlier, so it was done as early as this is when it started, the Rosh HaShmora HaTichona, the beginning of the middle watch. That's when it started. That was the earliest avoda, and that's when we'll see that Gidon is going out to attack. So Pasuk Yudches, Gidon tells his people, V'sakati b'shofar, and I will blow my shofar, Anochi v'chasher iti, me and all who are with me, usikatim b'shofaros gamatem, and then you should blow shofaros as well, svivos kalamachane, around the camp, v'amartem, and you should call out, v'hashem u'gidon, we're fighting for Hashem, and the salvation will come by at the hand of Hashem and through the vehicle of our leader Gidon. Pasuk Yates, Vayavo Gidon Umeya Ish Asher Ito Bikte HaMachaneh, and Gidon came with the 100 men that were with him to the edge of the camp. So they divide into three groups. 300 divide into three groups. So Gidon came with 100 men. Rosh HaShmores HaTichona, as I mentioned, it was the beginning of the Ashmores, the watch of HaTichona, from the word Tok, the middle of the middle watch. Acha came Hekimu Es HaShomrim, the first watch had just awoken the second watch, Vayisku ba'shofaro, v'nofo takadim asher b'yadam, and they blew on the shofaros, and they smashed the jugs with the flames in them that they were carrying. The significance of Hakeme Kimo es Hashomrim, I saw two opposite approaches, right? One approach was that they had just woken up the watchmen. That means that you have double watchmen awake. And it's to show an even greater miracle, like even though they had, there were double the amounts of watchmen awake, they still were frightened, the Jewish people were still victorious. The opposite approach, the Malbim says that, no, it was a strategic time to attack. The first group had just gone to sleep, and the second group had just been waking up. They were still waking up. They were still drowsy. It was a strategic time to attack the camp or to frighten them when they were just waking up. They didn't have their full senses yet. Actually, let me mention one more thing. This time of Ashmores HaTifona, the middle watch, which, assuming that there are three watches, Machlokes in the Gemara, I think if there are four watches at night or three, let's assume there are three, so you take the 12 hours of nighttime, so we're 4 hours into the night here. The Gemara implies that this is a very significant, very special time for tefillah, and it's actually brought down in Shulchan Aruch, right at the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, in the first siman, in Aruch Chaim, Shulchan Aruch says, Hamaskim l'ishanin l'ishnei boro, if a person wakes up early in the nighttime, to daven, yichavin l'sha'os semishtanos hamishmaros. He should aim for the hours when the watchmen switch. I think there's also like hours for angels, I'm not sure, but that is a third into the night and two thirds into the night, and at the end of the night, the person davens at those times for about the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and about the exile. That's a special time to daven, and so Harach brings down that's the time to daven. That's the time that Gidon chose to attack. This what? No, to daven like Tikkun Chatzos or I guess Tikkun Chatzos. No, well, no, it's not Shachar. It's still the middle of the night. It's only 4 hours into the night.
Right around midnight.
David got up at Chatzos, I think.
Kind of around midnight then.
I guess so, but it's not Chatzos. Because Chatzos is the middle of the night, and this is a third into the night and two thirds into the night. So,
still dark, confusion time.
Yes. Pasuk Chaf Vayisku Shloshes Harashim Bashofaros, and the three troops blew on their shofaros. Vayishperu Akadim, and they smashed their jugs. Vayachziku Biatzmolam Balapidim, and they held on with their left hand to the torches. Oh, I suppose they had torches in the jug. So they still held on to the torches, the pasuk describes. Uviad yamina mashofaros l'skoa, and in their right hand they held their shofar to blow. Vayikru cherev l'Hashem l'gidon, and they called out cherev l'Hashem l'gidon, sword for Hashem and for Gidon. The halacha is also brought down in Shulchan Aruch. In the halachos of Rosh Hashanah, the Ramah brings down Tov l'skoa b'tzad yamin. It's good to blow on the right side, if possible. It's good to blow the shofar on the right side. So the Mishnah Berurah understands that to mean on the right side of your mouth. It learns it from the pasuk. The pasuk says v'asatan omed al yamino l'satno. The Satan stands on your right side to entice you, and therefore you should keep the shofar on the right side to blow towards the satan. That's the simple understanding of this halacha. However, the Mishnah Berurah in the Bir Halacha, he quotes from the Meir Simcha, the Meshech Chachma. He said, I heard in the name of the Meshech Chachma another explanation of this, that we know the Gemara learns out the different halachos of blowing shofar from the shofar, the chatzotzer of milchama, the horns of war. And therefore, we have a pasuk in Gidon, our pasuk. It says that they held the torches in their left hand and their shofaros in their right hand. So we see that in war, you hold your shofar in your right hand. So we can learn from there also that you are to hold your the shofar in your right hand on Rosh Hashanah. So it's an alternative explanation of this halacha, not just that you should keep it on the right side of your mouth, but also that you should actually hold the shofar in your right hand, learned from our pasuk. What's that? What if a lefty is blowing the shofar? I'm not sure. Right, that might be different. Okay, you know, I think we're going to make a run for the end of the parak. There's about six more psukim. I don't have anything to add about them, so we're going to sprint to the end. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayamdu ish tachtov saviv l'machane. And the men stood under him around the camp. Vayaretzko l'machane. And the encampment of the Midianites ran by a Ryu, and they blew shofaros in their camp that they should flee by Anis, by Anusu, and they fled. By Yiskeu Shlosh Meos HaShofaros, and the men of Gidon blew their 300 shofaros. By Yasem Hashem Eith Chayrav Yishper Yehu V'cho HaMachane, and Hashem placed the sword of one Midianite man against his friend and in all the camp. So they began turning on each other. They didn't know who they were fighting. They thought that the Jewish people were among them. They began fighting internally. Vayanas HaMachana at Beis HaShita to Rei Rasa. And the camp fled to Beis HaShita, to Treira, at Tzvas Avil Mechola, Al Tabas, to the edge of Avil Mechola, on Tabas. I don't know where these places are, but they were fleeing. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Vayitzayik Ish Yisrael Min Naphtali Umin Asher Mikol Menashe. And the men of Israel gathered from Naphtali and from Asher and from all of Menashe, by Yirdifu Acharei Midian, and they chased after Midian. The Malbim pointed out earlier, and he references it here, that he learns that these men were the men, the first group of men that were asked to leave from Gidon's army. They weren't asked to completely desert and go back home. The first 22,000 men were asked to wait to ambush the Midianites when they fled, and that's what's happening in this pasuk. Pasuk Chafdalu du Malochim Shalach Gidon b'chol har Ephraim Lemor, and Gidon sent messengers in all of Mount Ephraim saying, Redu likras Midian, go down to greet Midian, to meet them, v'lichtu lahem asamayim, and block off the water so that they can't cross the yard and take away the bridges, the ferries, whatever it was. Ad Beis Bara, Beis Yarding, until Beis Bara and the Yarding, Vayitzai Kol Ish Ephraim, and the men of Ephraim gathered, Vayilkidu Esamayim, and they blocked off the water, the passage over the water, Ad Beis Bara, Beis Yarding, until Beis Bara and the Yarding, Vayilkidu, Pasuk Chafei, the last Pasuk, Vayilkidu Shnei Sari Midyang Et Ori Beis Eiv, and they blocked off the two officers of Midyang, Oriv and Zeiv, Vayargu es Orev, Bitzur Orev, es Ze'ev, Hargu, B'yakev Ze'ev, and they killed Orev in Tur Orev, and they killed Ze'ev in Yakev Ze'ev, Vayirdifu el Midyan, and they chased Midyan. Sounds like they chased them through Midyan. The Malbim says it just means they chased Midyan, because they blocked them off from going back to Midyan. Virosh Orev was Ze'ev, Heviu, El Gidon, Me'ever, Layarding, and the heads of the two leaders, Orev and Ze'ev, they brought to Gidon across the Yarding. I guess Gidon had now crossed the Yarding to continue the fighting, and they brought the heads of the two leaders, Orev and Ze'ev, to Gidon.